Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm ensconced in the Pete Donaldson kitchen, Abroad Japan, London HQ, because I've had to move from the front of the house to the back of the house. Because the builders, I don't really know what they're doing. I think they might be water people. They're the water people. Who are servicing the sewers or something. But they've decided to dig up the entirety of my road. I mean, they could have done this under lockdown when nobody needed to go down the road, but they've decided to take on the work as we head into July. And Soho's starting to get back to normal. So well done, Westminster Council, once again. But I am an Abroad Japan enthusiast. I am also a Nihonophile. I'm very into your air conditioning right now because it's very hot in London, and the British, it's all we can talk about, but it is very, very hot. And why we can't have air conditioning like the Japanese, I do not know. So I'm having to make do with a fan, which is currently off because I'm recording a podcast. No. So watch me melt, people. Watch me melt.
I remember I came back to the UK last summer for the first time in 8 years, because like whenever I come back, I come over Christmas or Easter or different times. But I came back in summer and I was so hot, but there was no aircon. And I'm used to aircon here, right? Without it, I'd be dead in a matter of minutes. I have it all night running to keep me cool in the summer months. And it's on right now, keeping me cool at the pleasant temperature of 20 degrees, whereas outside it's like 30 and it's humid and it's raining and it's awful. So I don't know what I'd do without it, and I don't know how you are living right now in your noisy kitchen, but at least you've got the gift of water. At least you've got water to look forward to.
The gift of water, yes, yes. I mean, they may turn that off at any moment to make their modifications, but who knows? But the entirety of the road outside is like kind of coloured in different colours to let people know where all the broadband lines are. So if I go quiet at any point, it's because someone's drilled through one of the many British Telecom phone lines that supply me with my underwhelming internet.
And I'll be forced to take on both myself and Pete Donaldson. I'll have to switch between voices. Could work. Could work. Could be better.
I like it.
Could be worse.
Nice idea.
Probably worse. It's funny. I love listening to you paint your picture of your bizarre neighbourhood. Like living in the centre of London, there's always something going on. Whereas me, I've got this view out my window right now, and I've got the, you know, beautiful Japanese house with all the old Japanese kind of styled tiles. It's raining, so the water's trickling down. It's kind of beautiful. It's like looking at a painting. There's you with your noisy roads, police sirens, people drilling through broadband cables. I feel pretty good about myself now.
Yeah, but the difference is, though, I'm of advancing years and you're a youngster, so you should be in my position and I should be in your position. All right, sunshine.
We should switch. We should switch for a month and I'll become you and you can become me. I've had a good day, though, Pete.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, what have you been up to?
I
drank no coffee.
Go on, guess.
You drank lots of coffee.
Better, right? I found some camembert cheese, and weirdly, I don't know why, I don't know how, but I had I had half of the camembert cheese on some crackers, and it's given me this weird, like, caffeine rush. I feel like I've drunk like three coffees. I don't know why. I don't know how this has happened, but cheese is my new caffeine, and it's
Jeremy
kind
Rennett.
Of surreal. Why has this happened?
I mean, it's got. I guess it's got a lot of sugar in it. I suppose cheese. I guess. It must do. Doesn't everything that tastes nice have more sugar than you expect?
Usually, yeah. Usually, yeah. It does.
Oh well,
if done. If you are a cheese enthusiast or a cheese expert listening in, guys, please let us know why cheese has had this surreal effect on me. Although, to be fair, I am also drinking a coffee. But I got the caffeine rush before the coffee, so I'm putting it down to the cheese. Putting it down to the cheese. We had an interesting story come through this week through the fax machine. We don't often read out story time messages at the start of these podcasts, but this one's so interesting and so good, it has to be read out. And it's from Justin from Canada, who's living in Fukushima. And it begins, King Chris and Professor Pete. I don't know why I'm King Chris. I don't know why you're Professor Pete. Why are you Professor Pete?
Well, because I earned my position and you're you're just a part of like a leechy family.
Brilliant. The only thing you're a professor of is gibbons, as we've established several episodes ago.
I'd
you that. Love gibbons.
I'm happy to have that. Love a gibbon.
Professor Pete. I'm a Canadian jet living in the super rural area of Fukushima, and I'm closing in on my 1 year anniversary of being a Japan exchange teaching person. But I think my best experience happened to me just yesterday. I was out going for a jog after work, soaking in the fresh air and beautiful mountainous landscape. And I was almost back home when a man waved at me from his driveway. I did a slight bow as I continued to run and said, konnichiwa, but he motioned me over to come and talk to him, which is always quite a scary part in a story because that's quite rare, isn't it? I took out my earbuds and I was still covered in sweat and I started to have a chat with this friendly Oji-chan, this friendly old man. We spoke in Japanese and English, and his English was surprisingly good considering his age in the remote countryside location. As we were chatting, he asked if I liked karaoke, to which I said, yes, of course. Ah, great, great. Please wait a moment, he said, as he popped back into his house. He returned with a key in hand, proceeded to open his garage and said, please, come on in. Oh, God. terrifying. Naturally, I followed my heart and this kindly old man into his garage. Much to my surprise, his entire garage was a fully decked out karaoke bar. We continued to chat a bit as the sweat continued to drip from my brow. Then he asked, do you like Elvis? I said, yes. And the next thing I know, can't help falling in love with you comes up on the screen. He handed me a microphone and we both start crooning together. I tried my best not to laugh at the immediate absurdity that my life had just become, but I managed to keep it together and go with the flow. We sang Yesterday by the Beatles, naturally, and finished off with some more Elvis, Love Me Tender. Since I was still drenched in sweat, sticky and stinky and hungry, I told him I had to go for a shower and make dinner. But I would definitely return sometime to sing with him. And so that is the story of my newfound 71-year-old friend. Keep up the great work, lads. Cheers, Justin from Canada. How awesome is that, Pete? That is amazing. Karaoke.
I mean, we get like kind of fax machine messages from a lot of people having like weird experiences with, you know, certainly all, members of the older generation in Japan. And it's always like a film, isn't it? It's always like a plot of a film. Yeah. It's like, this is unbelievable. Why is this happening? I mean, we wouldn't usually, you know, if an old man approached us in the street in our own countries, we probably wouldn't give them the time of day simply because, you know, we'd be like, well, what are you about? Why have you got that van? What's happening? But when you're in a magical place, you're just like, nothing bad can befall me. Nothing. So that's a beautiful story. I like that a lot.
I just the idea he's got this swanky karaoke bar in his garage. How awesome is that? Like, it's pretty rare. And
in fact, he's got
what I just love about karaoke is the way it brings people together like that. Like the first time I met Natsuki in Yamagata when I was walking down the street and he struck up a conversation, not too dissimilar from this, although Natsuki's English probably wasn't as good as the nice old man. Natsuki was like, do you like karaoke? And I was like, yeah, it's all right. And he went, let's karaoke. And he just took me off to a bar. And we did karaoke for 2 or 3 hours and became best friends. So karaoke is the key to unlocking friendships in Japan. And that's why we need it in the UK. We don't have karaoke, do we? Apart from a few bars in London, right?
We do, and they're very expensive, and you have to, and it's all centered. It's more centered around the booze than anything else, I think. It's fun, but I always find that, and I've said this before on the podcast, the people who are really into taking people to karaoke are the people who are really good at karaoke. So you're in a situation where, all right, you've basically just taken us to a room to see and show off how good you are at singing. Fuck off.
It's just a show off. I do find, though, like, it's quite rare to obviously when you go to a snack bar, a hostess bar, everyone sings karaoke and you have to endure the other people that are singing. And yet, what I found is most people in Japan can sing rather well. Like, I've very rarely heard someone who's like ripped my ears off. There's like a few really drunken people who sound like a cat, something terrible happening to a cat. But generally, yeah, people are good here. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's the style of music. Or the vocal range, but I guess just people put the effort in from an early age doing karaoke. Whereas in the UK, it'd be horrible, wouldn't it?
I remember having a Tuesday night in Osaka in a bar, and a man appeared from behind the bar to put together what can only be described as a one-man rendition of We Are the World, We Are the Children, with every single kind of voice contained within that song. He had the voices for the deep voice performers. He had the high voice for the high voice performers. It was a tour de force. It really was.
I love just hearing, people take on an English song and not do so well. Like, that is the bit where it falls down a little bit. Like, Japanese people singing Japanese songs, very rare to hear someone misstep, but in English, it falls apart quickly. Mm. I remember I was in a bar with you once and we were singing with Natsuki in Yamagata, and we listened to a guy sing and he butchered a song. I don't know if it was Wannabe by the Spice Girls or something, but it was just really bad. And
yeah, I have to dig out the footage. about mine and Natsuki's performance. Though I did get a round of applause for a boy cover, so there we go.
Good man, as you'd expect. But I mean, this situation sounds like a scene from an amazing film. And that got me thinking, we haven't ever talked about Japanese films worth watching, and you and I both love films, but we never discussed it. And obviously, given people are trapped indoors still after these many months, and a lot of you guys are just sitting indoors, can't go out, we thought we'd give you some ideas for films that you can watch while you're indoors to keep you company, keep you busy, and turn those long lonely nights into something productive, which is why I watch films. And so we've come up with 5 films each, and to kick it off, what have you got, Mr. Donaldson?
I think I've said it before, I've got a friend, this isn't like a sell for a friend's film company.
Definitely
but Third Window Films, clearly is. But basically, I'm very suggestible, so a guy I know sent over some DVDs from his company Third Window, and they basically specialise in finding, isolating films that wouldn't usually get a UK or European or US release or in the West, finding these unique films and sending them and bringing them over. And to a video, to a DVD, they've all been bloody excellent. So, I spent a good few days just smashing through them. My first film I'm going to go for is called Adrift in Tokyo. Satoshi Miki from back in 2007. It's basically a story about two men going for a walk. that's all it is. The official kind of description is that a man called Takemura has no friends and no family. He's a law student, but he doesn't have any particular ambitions. A thug offers to pay Takamura's considerable gambling debt if the student accompanies him on a trip across Tokyo. There's intrigue. Oh, yeah. There's possible dead wives. There's a subplot containing the dead wife's company. And it's really just a wonderful Sunday afternoon, big screen, just drink it in, little kind of... it's a film where nothing happens, but it's beautifully shot, and it's just two men strolling through the less busy parts of Tokyo through the day, and you're trying to figure out what's happening, and a lot of like the dynamics in kind of Japanese cinema seems to be older generations teaching the younger generations about something that they never thought they would be able
That's
to,
true, yeah.
And I think pretty much every film has we're going to be talking about today has that in there. But Adrift in Tokyo,
yeah.
Satoshi Miki from back in 2007. That's my first choice.
Very good. Actually, that's a good point. Like, a lot of the themes tend to revolve around the family unit. I think because a lot of Japanese movies or films set in Japan just don't have a big budget. You don't have a lot of action films. It is mainly kind of focusing on drama. Not that that's a bad thing, because I think the stories are very good. I do like the idea, though. Why does the thug want the guy to go with him on the walk? Or does that spoil it by me asking you that?
I'm not sure I can remember. And also, I think it does spoil it a little bit. It's just this weird kind of like odd couple. I don't know, you know, why are these people together? Why are they traveling through Tokyo and going for a walk? I won't spoil it, but Adrift in Tokyo, big flavors.
I haven't seen it, but I want to see it. From when I was doing some research for this video, it looked pretty good. So Adrift in Tokyo, Satoshi Miki, 2007. My first one on my list is Tokyo Sonata. Kiyoshi Kurosawa directed it in 2008, and it's about the family unit kind of crumbling around the father figure. The dad, Yuhei Sasaki, is keeping a secret from his wife and his two teenage sons. He leaves the house every day to go to work, but it's quickly revealed in the film that he doesn't actually have a job. He lost it, and he's like trying to find another job. And it's a lot to do about his sense of shame in that role, because obviously the father figure, the husband, is very much the breadwinner in Japanese society. Like, there's a lot of pressure. If you don't get that salary, it's not good. And as well as losing his own job, his good friend, his best friend, also hasn't got a job, and he's trying to help him out the whole time. So it's kind of built around that. And I don't want to spoil too much as a result, but like, it's kind of about that tension. And it is quite funny at times, the way he tries to conceal the fact that he doesn't have a job, the way he makes it look like he's still got a job. He'll sort of return home and be like, oh yeah, it's been a long day. But actually he's just been like laying on a bench all day in a park asleep. so that's kind of cool. And it's kind of about how the son, who feels neglected, finds some sort of sense of, I don't know, he kind of learns how to play the piano, and that gives him a sense of purpose in life. But it's a drama, but there's definitely a comedic aspect to it. But it is about the family unit. And it is a lot of fun and quite depressing and sad watching the guy try and conceal that he hasn't got a job from his wife and family. So Tokyo Sonata, Kiyoshi Kurosawa, 2008. Definitely check it out. And I haven't watched it in a few years, but it left a great impression and I need to rewatch it very soon. What have you got, Mr. Dawson?
I'm looking at the Wikipedia for that film, and it was budget $2.5 million, box office 940,000. So I presume that's domestic box office, because it went on to win every single award going in Cannes and all of the film festivals.
Won a lot of awards.
So I imagine it probably made its money back a few times over.
A lot of those kind of independent films don't really, and I suspect a lot of the films on this list might not have made back their money, but we'll get into that. What have you got?
I've got, it's another one from Third Window, Love and Other Cults. This one is fun. Eiji Uchida from a couple of years ago. It's basically about a child who gets sent to live with a commune where she lives there for 7 years. The cult gets broken up by the police. She struggles to fit in with society. It's about identity. It's about delinquency. It's just a right bloody romp. There's always something going on. It's about juveniles just getting into all kinds of trouble, and parents. It's the sort of, you see a lot of parents being, like the TV show, like Shameless, where every kind of authority figure is a bit of a loser. And you don't see that in Japanese cinema a lot. Like you say, it's all about the patriarchy, or the matriarchy. The man comes home and brings he's the breadwinner, blah blah blah. This just seems to be all about a set of kids whose parents have just fucking let them get on with it. they're just not very good parents. Love and Other Cults is really colourful. It's really exciting. It's there's always something going on. And if you fancy like a good Friday night thriller, it's not particularly violent, but it's just it's a bit naughty and fun. So yeah, get involved with that. Love and Other Cults.
What is the cult? Commune? Like this cult? What do they believe in?
Again, I'm not very good with that, with memories, but I think it's just one of those kind of like new agey kind of cults that, but that is kind of like a thread that a lot of films have where I think I've read a few books where mums will, like single mothers will be, will be attracted to kind of new age kind of religions and stuff like that, and a lot of people have grown up through that. You know, fathers as well, but they tend to be more let's go down to Guyana and drink the Kool-Aid. But I think, but I've read like a lot of books where like a lot of people sort of formative years will grew up in cults because everyone's looking for answers, aren't they? And if you're a parent and you've just had kids and stuff, you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I need answers. And cults and religious organizations of ill repute can sometimes take advantage of that, I think it's fair to say. So, yeah, it's a really interesting film, really colourful. Again, a right bloody romp.
A right bloody romp. Sounds good. Love and Other Cults.
Yeah.
A.G. Uchida, yeah. 2017. My next one is probably one of my favourite Japanese films. I have a soft spot for it. I think I've talked about it before. And it is Departures in Japanese, Okurabito. And I have a special place in my heart for this one because it's filmed and shot in Yamagata, in the very town where I lived and worked. And I watched this film. It came out in 2008, and I watched it around 2010. And then I found out I was being placed in the very town where it was set. And it was really surreal when I arrived in the town all those years later and wandered around it and recognized all these locations. But it is a good film, fundamentally. It won the Best Foreign Picture Award in, I think, the Oscars in 2008, 2009, which is an incredible achievement. I think it's the first Japanese film to do that. And it's basically about the stigma around working in coffining, working in the kind of sector in coffining. Do you know what encoffining is, Pete?
Is it making coffins?
It is. And it's kind of like carrying out rituals used in preparing the kind of dead for their final rest. Basically, the main character, Daigo, he's in an orchestra in Tokyo. The orchestra disbands right near the start of the film, and he decides to move back to his hometown in Yamagata and try and find a new job. And he answers an ad for what he thinks is a travel agency, but in actuality, it's a mortuary. And he's sort
right.
of, he quickly finds he's quite good at this surreal job, doing the rituals and preparing people, but it's seen as a really bad thing in Japan to work in that sector. And he's, you know, the people around him are kind of sickened that he does this. He has this horrible decision to make. Should he quit this job that he's good at and he loves for people around him, or should he embrace it and, you know, go ahead with it? And it's about that conflict. But it's one of the few films that's actually made me tear up. I don't cry. The only time I cry is when I go to Family Mart and the Family Mart fried chicken's run out. So it's a pretty impressive achievement for a film to make me feel some emotion. So Departures is an amazing film and I highly recommend it. And yeah, it's a special place in my heart. And I really like that. It's just one of my favorite films. So Departures, check it out.
Yeah, beautiful. I think the film I was talking about earlier on with the men who go for a walk. Is walk Tanpo?
No, Sanpo.
Sanpo. Right, because I was thinking Sanpo. That sounds a little bit like Tanpopo, which is Dandelion or Sunflower, which is another film that you really like.
That's right. I don't know why. Surprisingly, it's not on the list. I think it's because I've talked about it so much.
Not on the list. Well, I've talked about this film quite a lot, to be fair. Fukuchan of Fuku Fuku Flats. If you've been listening from the start of this
alliteration,
sorry escapade. You will know that I really, really like this. Probably one of my favourite Japanese films. It's about a big fat mess, bald labourer man who has to overcome his shyness towards women in order to recover some kind of, you know, meaning for living. The actor itself is a famous Japanese actress, Miyuki Oshima, shaved her head. She plays this this male labourer. One day, she's a famous, she's quite a famous comedian, apparently, Miyuki Oshima. And one day, a woman turns up at Fuku Fuku Flats, where Fuku-chan lives, and then he realizes that it's his first love from his high school days. Not seen this woman for like 20 years, and she's come back to apologize for something that's happened in both of their pasts. And she's an aspiring photographer, and he begins to fall in love with her all over again. It's really, he's scared of women, but this meeting this woman from his school days kind of reignites something inside him, and he becomes a more full rounder character. But it's a really kind of like stellar performance from Miyuki Oshima, who's playing a male character, and well worth a watch. 2014, Yosuke Fujita.
Sounds really surreal.
It's funny. It's just funny, and I think again I've said it before, and you've said it. Like, we have a very small, we have a very sort of stereotypical idea about what Japanese comedy has for us. I think you were sort of talking about it on your recent YouTube video. A lot of Japanese television, and we think that it's all, you know, Takeshi Castle and people falling over and slapstick stuff like that, and it just isn't. But very enjoyable. Very enjoyable. One of my faves.
Quite the tongue twister. Fuku-chan of Fuku-fuku Flats.
Flats.
That's some serious alliteration. My one, it'll be a crime to have a list of Japanese films without having one from Takeshi Kitano, better known as Beat Takeshi, of course. And my favourite of his films, he's done lots of films. He's well known as being in Battle Royale, amongst other things, which isn't on our list. Everyone loves Battle Royale, but the film I chose from him is one he directed and starred in, and it's called Hanabi, literally fireworks. And it's about him. He's a Japanese police officer who loses his job, and lots of terrible things happen to him. Basically, his wife gets diagnosed with leukemia. I think his partner is killed. One of them's paralyzed after they mess up. Basically, they're trying to take down some yakuza, and it goes horribly wrong, and he loses a lot of his friends, and things go downhill. He loses his job, his wife's ill, couldn't be in a much worse position, really. And yet, to clear his debt, he has to then borrow money from the yakuza as well. And then throughout the film, they're basically trying to get the money out of him. And it's about that situation, a guy who was good, who's just been pushed down again and again due to bad luck. And it's a very interesting film. A lot of it, there's barely any dialogue from Takeshi Kitano. He's kind of very silent. The film has a very poetic quality to it. A lot of the performance is very kind of nuanced. It's more like there's not much dialogue. You could probably count the number of lines on two hands. And yet it becomes very powerful for it, because in the film, the character Nishi, played by Beat Takeshi, is incredibly violent. And you have these kind of nice, quiet moments. He's like playing with his wife, and then someone will do something, like accidentally do something, and he'll lose his fucking shit, and he'll rip their face off and be incredibly violent for like 30-40 seconds. And it's really quite shocking, that kind of sort of slow, calm movie, and then bang, he'll pull out some chopsticks and stuff them through someone's eyeball, and it's like it's quite surreal as a result. But it is a very beautiful film. The soundtrack's amazing, and just the way it lingers. You find with a lot of the best movies, the shots linger on the character, right? It's not quick and fast pace. It lingers on the character before and after those moments, so you can get really drawn in and you can really empathize with them. And I think the film really works for it, you know, having those brutal, horrible moments punctuated by silence and reflection. It really works.
Well, you look at films like Drive, and there are very few film actors that command people's attentions. You'd sort of look at people like, I'm trying to think of the more modern ones, but I mean, I guess, who is the guy?
Ryan Reynolds in Drive.
Is that Ryan Reynolds? That's not Ryan Reynolds, is it?
Ryan Gosling.
I think he is one of the few film actors in it working in Hollywood today who just has presence, and that you cannot buy. He doesn't say anything. He's like Steve McQueen. He doesn't say anything in any of his films. And people just look at him and he's just got it. I think other actors have to work a bit harder. You know, your Tom Hardys and stuff, people who are regarded as being this new sort of breed of excellent actors. I think there are very few people who have that kind of presence. And obviously, Beat Takeshi, he's been at the top of his game for such a long time for that very reason, because he just commands the screen and commands the scene.
Absolutely. I don't know what it is about Ryan Gosling. I mean, he's great in Blade Runner 2049. He's also quite good in The Nice Guys, a comedy with himself and Russell Crowe.
Fantastic.
A really good film.
Was that one where he's a heroin addicted teacher? Lars and the Real Girl. Like I'll watch anything with him, even Beyond the Pines, which was fucking a little bit boring.
We've discovered your Ryan Gosling obsession, Pete's weird obsession, ladies and gentlemen. He loves Ryan Gosling.
I think he's brilliant. He's just very, very watchable.
When you were doing your job,
never did anything with him. Did I do any Blade Runner stuff? No. I just did. I did the wrestler out of that.
Poor old Pete. All he wanted was Ryan Gosling, and he got Bryan Cranston.
Ryan Gosling. Never mind.
Brilliant. All right, what you got next?
Next, we've got Akira.
Ah, classic.
I think everyone in the world knows what Akira is. Katsuhiro Otomo. It was back in 1988. I thought it was a little bit older than that, but that was certainly something that I watched. Channel 4 used to do a lot of seasons where they would have quite violent and strange, sometimes sexual, kind of banned films back in the day. And Channel 4 used to be very subversive in England. They've become less so, and they've become, you know, homogenized and kind of gone with the money. But they used to be quite interesting in the stuff that they do. But Akira is an animation based on a manga. I think the bloke Omoto, is it Omoto or Otomo? Either way, I think the manga artist writer, it was a serial from 82 up to when it came out as a film. And basically he wrote the series, paused the series as a manga, and then did the film effectively. Certainly, you know, wrote, directed and supervised the film version. And so it was finished before the actual story in the magazine in the manga actually finished. It's a little bit like Game of Thrones, I think. But it's basically about the World War III takes place. There's an explosion, Nagasaki or Hiroshima. Tokyo's rebuilt as Neo Tokyo, and in 2019, last year, to casual observers, a motorcycle gang basically just gets into a bit of a battle, and Tetsuo is desperate to kind of get out of this kind of like group of hoodlums, and then Tetsuo, I think he gets injured in a motorcycle accident. This is all about motorbikes and stuff. Mm. These incredible red machines. Tetsuo is taken by the government, and they decide to do tests on him. And there's a terrorist group, and they want to find the one that's called Akira. And it's the reason why the weirdest manga and anime exists in the West can only be down to the popularity of Akira in the late 80s and the 90s. It was an era-defining moment for the discipline. They've tried so many times to do live-action versions. I think Jordan Peele is the latest person who's really attached to it. Might happen, might not, but if I was a betting man, I'd say it's not going to happen, and if it does, it'll be fucking awful. So Akira, well, it can't be any worse than Ghost in the Shell, but which I quite enjoyed it in a weird kind of way. A stunning watch, even in 2020. Get a nice big print of it, get it on your big telly, and get, you know, maybe smoke some weed or something, I don't know, because it's fucking weird.
It is pretty trippy. I've only actually watched it once, and I did really enjoy it. There's some great cyberpunk visuals, and I mean, helped define the genre, and it is an incredible film. But I remember thinking, this is mental, like, especially in the second half, it just gets really out of hand. But there's just so many ideas and themes explored, and it's so beautifully done. It is an incredible film, and I really need to rewatch that, actually, more than
this is getting
any other
out of
film
hand
on this list. I
just think it's funny. It's just like, this is getting out of hand. Like, watching Akira, and like, you know, you're watching these big pink testicles explode everywhere, and teddy bears come bleeding and coming to life, and you go, this is getting out of hand. This is getting too much.
Well, it's also a clever pun if you know what happens in the second half. Spoilers. Anyway, great film. You have to watch it, regardless of your thoughts on anime. It's just, you know, even if you're not into anime or you've rejected the genre, it's incredible, and it needs to be watched.
You have to.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
The next one on my list is the complete opposite direction to Acura, this large, huge-scale production. It's called Like Someone in Love, and it's directed by Iranian director Abbas Kiarostami. Now, it's about an elderly man who hires an escort girl and how awkward and uncomfortable that situation becomes. Basically, her boyfriend is very paranoid that she's doing something. Like, I think she's trying to conceal the fact she's an escort girl doing this sort of job from her boyfriend, and he discovers what's going on and starts basically coming after her, and it gets really uncomfortable. But it's a very slow film, and the climax almost, like, it's hard to describe it without ruining it, but there's a big event that happens, but it doesn't happen, and that's the only way I can describe it. It's kind of very slow film. The camera lingers very long on moments between this girl and the old man, and that's already a tantalizing situation. It's not like this sleazy old man hiring the escort girl. She sort of goes around his house. He's a very nice man who you can tell doesn't quite know why he's hired an escort girl, and he's very confused about the situation. She's like, come on, let's get it over with, and he's just like, let's listen to a record from the 1940s, and she's like, what? And it's very slow. It's basically set in his apartment the whole time, but then he has to pretend this boyfriend who's coming after her. The old man has to pretend that he is the girl's father to try and get around it, to hide the fact that she's actually still seeing clients and things. And it's kind of about that situation, like what would happen if that was a situation that happened and how it plays out. But it's a very interesting film. You might find the ending quite unsatisfying, but some really fantastic performances, a really surreal situation, and just very beautifully filmed. The cinematography is outstanding. And the director is one of the most famous Iranian filmmakers. Unfortunately, passed away a couple of years ago. But Like Someone in Love, check it out. It's a surreal film, but it's quite a rewarding experience.
Yeah, watch it. And if you don't trust us, Mark Commode gives it 5 stars. He loves it.
There you go. 5 stars from Mark Commode. British director, British reviewer, right? Never really seen too many of his reviews. I know he's good, though.
Yeah, I trust him on everything apart from comedy. So there you go.
Very good. Well, the next one.
Speaking of comedy.
It's a special one, isn't it? It's a special one.
It's a special one, is it? Is it a special one? I don't know.
Well, it is, because we built the podcast off of me being angry that I couldn't see this film.
And then
were able to get Bryan Cranston because of it as well. To shout out the voice of the main
character, I believe.
Yeah, what
it's a film called I Love Dogs.
You love dogs.
Exactly. See what they've done there. The Isle of Dogs. Isle of Dogs. I Love Dogs. Wes Anderson, 2018, completely animated, beautifully animated, using almost completely stop motion plasticine animation. When by executive decree all the canine pets of Megasaki City are exiled to a vast garbage dump called Trash Island, 12-year-old boy Atari sets off in a little plane and flies across the river in search of his bodyguard dog, Spots. He's the son of a rich person. He's a very important character, and he must be found. And then basically a pack of dogs who live on this island where they've all been banished. Atari sets off on a big journey that will decide the fate and future of the entire prefecture. And I'm obviously reading a lot of that, but it is a stunning, beautiful film.
It is.
Wes Anderson, at the time, slightly criticized for the use of Japanese culture. Yeah, exactly. But most Japanese critics would argue that he showed a massive amount of respect for it and did it in the right way. So, and I would probably agree with that one, to be quite frank. So yeah, fantastic film. Kickstarted this podcast into gear, I'd say, due to Chris's constant belly aching that he couldn't go and see this film because it was out in Britain before it was out in Japan.
It came out, you make it sound like it was a week apart. It came out in February in the UK and came out in late May in Japan, which I found ridiculous given it was set here. But no, it's a great film. I find the plot is kind of average. It's not like as memorable as a lot of Wes Anderson's other films like Moonrise Kingdom or Grand Budapest Hotel, which is one of my favorite films. But it's good enough. And the artistic direction more than makes up for that. And the artistic direction, it's like someone gave, it's like Wallace and Gromit had a $100 million budget. What would they do with it? Like the visuals are absurdly good. And there's just some, if you know your Japanese culture, there's just so many funny nuances. I just love the name Megasaki City as well. Megasaki. Why isn't that a name of a city? Definitely should be.
Enjoyable.
It's a good film, really good film. And it's got a great cast as well. Including two members of the cast who are in the next and final film on our list. It features Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson. So you probably know what's coming up on the end of our list. And it is, of course, 2003 classic, Sofia Coppola's Lost in Translation. I was reluctant to put it on the list to some extent. However, to my surprise, there's still a lot of people who haven't seen it. I'm like, oh, what's your favourite thing in Lost in Translation? Oh, I haven't seen it. What has to be seen? I remember back in 2003 or 4, we had some sort of DVD rental service in the UK. And I think my mum rented it. I just didn't watch it. And we just had it in our dining room for like 3 or 4 months. Didn't have to return it. And I thought, this looks weird. I was only 13 at the time. And I don't think I knew who Bill Murray was. Or I just thought he was just this elderly man who's been Ghostbusters. Yeah. Now I know him different. Now I know he's like the greatest, one of my favourite actors, so bloody funny. But I remember watching it and thinking, this is amazing. And just it's just so funny, the plot, the story, the characters, the portrayal of Tokyo. Tokyo itself is beautifully portrayed in the film. But for anyone who's ever been in Tokyo and been jet-lagged, you'll be able to relate to some extent to the characters in the film. Have you ever had a Lost in Translation moment, Pete? Have you ever felt that way?
I think sort of waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and, you know, I can't do what Bill Murray does, goes down to his ridiculously expensive swimming pool to go and have a swim. But yeah, I think that kind of like, that's almost sort of druggy kind of waking, sleeping kind of, you know, time in a sprawling metropolis where you don't understand the language or what the fuck is going on. It's really interesting. I think, again, it kind of ties together some of the themes that in the other films that we've that we've talked about. It's a slightly uncomfortable relationship at times.
It's a bit weird.
I don't think, and I don't think Scarlett Johansson had the best time filming it. I think Bill Murray is frequently quite hard to deal with, and I think sometimes I'm kind of coming around to the opinion of there's certain men in Hollywood. I'm not saying Bill Murray is necessarily one of them or even the worst of them, but they get respect for being difficult to work with when they could just not be difficult to work with. And I think from what I heard from that particular filming, it was a pretty difficult
really?
One. Bill Murray just felt like Bill Murray will just walk onto a scene and just do whatever the fuck he wants. And you know,
it seemed to work.
Well, it did work. It's a beautiful film. Sofia Coppola, one of my favorite films is the one she did before, Virgin Suicides, which I heartily recommend as well. Yeah. Again, that kind of dreamy, beautifully soundtracked. I mean, this film in itself, it's got a hell of a soundtrack. There's that, what's that bloody French band? Jesus Christ. There's Death in Vegas. There's all kind. The soundtrack of this film is really, really good. Sweet Like Honey. Who did that song? Just a great soundtrack. Beautiful film. One of the reasons, you know, I'll happily admit it was one of the reasons why that made me want to go to Japan, because it just made it look fucking mental. So yeah, I think it ties together a lot of subjects that I think a lot of people who'll be listening to this podcast why they love Japan, and it's just so alien.
Certainly being the ultimate marketing for the Park Hyatt Hotel where it was set, because the hotel is the third character in the film, like the constant shots of the bars and the swimming pools and the views. And I've been up there. I've stayed there once because I always wanted to do it because of this film. I wanted to see what it was actually like. And I've swum in the pool. I've sat at the bar. It's very expensive. I did it while I was on a teacher's salary, and it was like half a month's salary gone up in smoke over a two-day period. But it was fun. And I got to sit in the spa room that Bill Murray sits in. And I was like sitting there alone thinking, this is cool. Bill Murray sat here 10 years ago. I felt pretty good about myself. But yeah, you've got to go up there. There's a great bar. I'll take you if you haven't been, Pete. The New York Grill Bar. Lovely place. Great view. And that concludes our list of 10 films, ladies and gentlemen. We've got so many on there. Yeah. I hope there's at least one film that you found tantalising or intriguing. For me, the best film on the list would have to be, I'd say Departures, just probably Departures, closely followed by Lost in Translation. What about you, Pete? One film.
That's really difficult, isn't it? Love and Other Cultures, a lot of fun. But if you've not seen Akira, what's wrong with you? Watch Akira.
Yeah, you have to watch that. That's a rule for anything. Yeah. Right, fantastic. Now then, let us dive in to the fax machine. What have we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson?
Oh, we got an email from Anna in Tokyo. Hello, Anna in Tokyo. I have a story for you that I think your listeners will find amusing and educational. Tuesday night, I was transferring lines at Shibuya Station on my way home. It was around about 9:30 at night. I hurried down the steps to catch the express train home because otherwise I would have had to wait for the next one in 10 minutes. Oh, no. Imagine that. I'm swinging my arms for the extra momentum and whoops, there goes my phone out of my grasp. It disconnects from my headphones and slides right over the platform, but not onto the train. I've dropped my phone into the gap. As the other Japanese passengers hear a few choice curse words from my mouth, I look around for platform staff. I go up to tell him that I've dropped my phone off the platform and I need someone to get it. He asks where, and I show him the gate to car 5, door 3. He tells them it's going to take a while because there are trains coming and going every minute. I wait around past another express train awkwardly because I don't have a phone to play with. Eventually, more train staff appear with a Swiffer covered in tape. Swiffer. They open the safety gate and use the mighty sticky Swiffer and have my phone back in my hands in under 8 minutes, no damage at all. So what should your listeners do if they drop something in the gap at the station? 1, don't panic. 2, don't press the emergency button. I mean, I wouldn't do that anyway, Anna, but locate the train staff, let them know. Most of the train staff in Tokyo do speak English now. 4, wait and be patient. You'll get your thing soon. I'm now being told by friends to buy a lottery ticket because it was lucky it wasn't broken, but that might be a Japanese lottery marketing strategy. If something lucky happens to you, continue the luck and buy a lotto ticket. The end. Anna in Tokyo, a beautifully told story, terribly read out by me. But yeah, don't press the emergency button if you drop your phone. They do have processes for these things.
I mean, that's quite reassuring because I've always wondered what would happen if I dropped my phone on platform. It seems they got it back pretty effortlessly. And I particularly love your pronunciation of the Swiffer. A Swiffer.
Swiffer? Is it like a Swiffer? It just sounds like, I mean, I presume it's just a stick. What's a Swiffer?
It's a stick. It's a Swiffer. You use a Swiffer to clean the floor, isn't it? It's one of those things you swift.
Oh, I see.
I just created a verb. You swift it along the floor.
Swift. I have you swift. I'm obsessed with the idea of, you know, like those, you know, in shops, when you've got short staff who work in the shops, they use those little grabber things to grab things It's just a grabber.
A grabber.
What would you do if you had more than one grabber? Like, could you grab another grabber and use that grabber as a hand? So if the first grabber effectively becomes an extension of your hand.
Right.
Which is great how it's designed. Grab another grabber that will operate the lever on the second grabber that then you can pick up the third grabber and you could have infinite grabbers grabbing all the time. And you could have the ultimate grabber length because you grabbing.
What would you do with this newfound power?
I just don't know. I'd be, you probably don't remember the Mr. Men, but I'd probably be like,
I remember the Mr. Men. It's Mr. Grabber.
Well, Mr. Mr. Tickle is was a, I mean, to be honest, in 2020, a problematic individual. He was a man who went around tickling people who didn't want to be tickled. So yeah, I'd be the Mr. Tickle of the digital age.
I love the way we've gone from dropping a phone on a platform at Shibuya Station to you declaring you want to be Mr. Tickle.
Well, I've never heard of a bloody whiffer before. It's not my fault.
Swiffer.
About the place. Swiffer.
Sort it out. Sort it out. Have a battle,
Chris.
You can have a grabber. I'll have a Swiffer. Swiffer to the death. All right. Swiffer's aside. We got one from Lauren from Texas. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I started watching Abroad in Japan last year to prepare for my vacation with my roommate and her family to Japan. I've started listening to the podcast and it's keeping me entertained during my car rides and summer classes. I fell in love with Japan when I visited and I got in touch with my university's study abroad office so I could go back. I'm supposed to be doing an exchange program with Osaka University next spring and summer to do research in their labs. Crossing my fingers this will still happen. My questions are, what is the most financially feasible option to use my phone over there? I used pocket Wi-Fi last time and liked it, but that'll be expensive for 5 months, I feel. And number two, should I go by nickname while I'm over there? My name starts with L, and I know most Japanese people have a hard time pronouncing that letter since the sound doesn't appear in the language. I'd hate to make anyone struggle, but I'm not exactly partial to the Japanese version of my name either. Thanks so much. Hope you're staying safe and well. Lauren from Flower Mound, Texas." Flower Mound? It's an interesting name for a town,
beautiful
isn't it?
Beautiful part, yeah. I love Texas, and I've never been to Flower Mound, though. Flower Mound!
You haven't lived. I mean, first of all, I think Lauren isn't that difficult to say for a Japanese person. They just say Loren. Loren. Like that. Loren. It's more like two R's, right? Loren. Loren. So I don't think it's hard. Just stick with your name, Lauren. Or just choose another name. What can we call Lauren? What would you call her?
Sophie. I don't know.
Sophie. Sophie. Yeah. That works. Or, yeah, go with that. What about, you're the man who loves pocket Wi-Fi and all things Wi-Fi and phone. What have you done, Pete? What would you do?
I love that pocket Wi-Fi I do. We've been sponsored by them before, and they're not giving us any money at the moment, so I shouldn't really be advertising them, but mobile.com are very good. mobal.com. They do pocket Wi-Fi, they do SIM cards for unlocked phones, and they also do I think their main business is people who like are on the JET program, who are living over there. You know, they can do kind of like 6 month, 12 month contracts on the old mobile phone on I think SoftBank, which is obviously a really, really good network to be on over there. I think it's like 99% coverage. So yeah, it's I have to recommend mobile.com. I just have to, guys. Tell them Abroad in Japan sent you.
How's that spelled? Mobile.
mobal.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's get them sponsoring us again. Please come back. Come back again. We got one from Andrew. Andrew from Massachusetts. I'll let you read that as I take a final swig of my coffee.
All right, then. Coffee. Of course you drink coffee. It's 7 p.m. Hey, Chris and Pete. I was supposed to visit Tokyo for the first time in April with my wife. But we all know why that didn't happen. Because I killed her. Andrew did not kill his wife. It was because of a worldwide pandemic. The closest I've been was Narita Airport on my way to Seoul 2 years ago to experience the Winter Olympics. We had a couple of hours between flights and I knew I had to come back. I've been a fan of the country and culture for over 15 years now. Over the past few months, I've greatly enjoyed your videos whilst killing my wife. They are really great. I'm joking. She didn't kill his wife. They really are great. And I walk my dog, Ramona, while listening to podcast episodes and looking for a burial spot for my wife. I'm joking. Didn't kill his wife. Lucky dog gets a lot every time. I've stopped now. My question for you guys is sort of hard to put to words. Basically, is there anything you can do to make yourself seem more approachable to Japanese locals? You mentioned the Japanese tendencies to be shy and steer clear of direct interaction, but I would enjoy having a chance to interact a bit with someone there when I do actually eventually get there beyond just a cashier. Anything I could do to make myself present better in this scenario would be great. Thanks again, and keep up the great work. Andrew, not murderer, from Massachusetts. Definitely not murderer. Poor old Andrew. I don't know why I enjoyed it reading that email out in that fashion so much. I think I've had two coffees and I'm excitable. I would say off the bat, wear a t-shirt with like something that people understand over there. My mate would wear like the shittest fucking Pikachu Pokemon t-shirt.
Oh god.
And he would always get talked to by people. Like, people would be, oh, Pikachu, like, talk to him. And I'm like, you are wearing the most basic stupid t-shirt, and yet everyone would just be coming over and go, whoa, that's fucking Pikachu. It would be like wearing a picture of the Queen over here or something, wouldn't it? Or
that would probably go down.
Or Freddie Mercury, even.
That would go down with some interesting results, wearing the Queen in Japan. they have a bit of a fascination with the royal family here. I would say, right. Yeah, I mean, following on that, I have the For Fuck Sake t-shirt, right? I brought in Japan merchandise, yeah. Which I don't sell at the moment. So stop asking, ladies and gentlemen. I'm working on it. There's a new store coming.
Working
don't worry.
On it.
It's coming.
He's working on it.
But like, whenever I go in a bar wearing that, people are like, oh, you like Japanese sake? I'm like, yeah, it's all right, isn't it? They don't get that it's a pun or anything.
Right,
they just think
I have
some sort of deep appreciation for Japanese sake.
Drunkard.
Rather than a pun.
You're just a craft sake drunkard.
Absolutely. I like that. That's a great description. I would say you've got to often make the first move. From my experience, like, people are shy. But once you start talking to them in any capacity, you've got like a 80% chance of having a conversation. Like, it really works. Just actually try and make the first move. Maybe use a little bit of Japanese, even if it's basic, even if it's just konnichiwa or arigato or do desu ka, anything. Very simple. It will unlock the Pandora's box of excitement and conversation in Japan. What have you done, Pete? You've come to Japan. You seem to do very well at mingling with the locals. How do you do it? What's the secret?
I don't know. Have a receding hairline so people think that you look like Malfoy out of Harry Potter.
They love Malfoy.
That, really.
Malfoy's really popular.
A bit of Malfoy.
I remember like one of the first conversations I had with Natsuki, he was like, I love Malfoy. And I was like, what? Where's that coming from? And apparently Malfoy is really popular in Japan because of his hair. He's got nice blonde,
I bleached my hair, so I could not look
Malfoy.
More like Malfoy at the moment. I've got like bleach blonde hair. I look like I'm having a breakdown. I'm having a breakdown.
You sound like having a breakdown. Brilliant. You are the Malfoy. Yeah. You are the Malfoy we deserve. Start a conversation, wear a funny t-shirt, have a drink,
shout something
go in a bar,
offensive,
and just wait for a nice, kind elderly man to offer you karaoke in his garage.
Wet yourself in the bar. Sit at the bar.
Brilliant.
Wet yourself.
What a nice end. A nice end to the podcast. And I'm sorry to Andrew for Pete's traumatic interpretation of your email. It's not every day you
Where's
get to send
your
a
wife,
question.
Andrew?
Oh god, poor old Andrew.
Where's that wife?
He's come to listen to a podcast and he ends up with a traumatizing narrative developed by Pete. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back same time next week to do it all over again, guys. But for now, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great week and we'll be back next Wednesday to do it all over again. Bye for now.
Watch Akira.
Do it.
Was a Stakhanov production.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered.
Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.